Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 338. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're excited to have back with us the internationally acclaimed comic book creator, Wells Thompson.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I don't know who's acclaiming me internationally, but I'm grateful for it.
The last time you were on, you are internationally acclaimed because you do have some readers in Great Britain, and you also have some readers in Canada too.
So. Absolutely. We have a couple in Amsterdam as well. There's like a smattering. There's a couple in Sweden, Australia. Yeah, all over the place. One super fan that lives in Singapore. And I appreciate him so much.
And now, so last time you were on, we were doing the math. Last time you were on, it was episode 213, and you were here with your co-writer and your friend Dalton, and you were talking about Frankenstein Unconquered. You had issues 1 and 2, and since then, you have been going amazingly well with other titles, and one of them, as of this recording, is near the ending of its Kickstarter, and it has nothing to do with Frankenstein Unconquered. And then before that, you actually had a really successful Kickstarter, a very book called The Catskin and the Rose, which has nothing to do with Frankenstein Unconquered and has nothing to do with Mechaton. So obviously what we're seeing here, Wells, is that you are not being pigeonholed into one type of genre of comic book.
No, I really have always enjoyed sort of exploring different genres, and you know, I think when I was younger, it was something of a you know, trying to buck the idea of being pigeonholed, or you know, just rejecting the idea of like, you know, you have to work in a genre. I'm like, why? But I do love genre. I love working in horror. I love working in, you know, science fiction, fantasy. But I still just have sort of the urge to, you know, if I've worked in science fiction, cool. I'm going to go do something else, completely different. So yeah, it's, maybe that's not the best thing to do to build a following. I don't know, but it's the only way I know how to work. So yeah, people can expect wildly different things from me.
Now, because the genres are so different, was there any of these stories that seemed to have come more naturally and was easier for you to write, or was it some that you seemed more excited to write?
I mean, I'm excited. I only really like sit down and write a story that no one is paying me to write if I'm really excited about it. But yeah, for different reasons, for sure. And I'll say that I think probably Mechaton is maybe the least natural in some ways. And I did that on purpose. So I work with my friend Dalton, who is great friend, great writer. His style has always been more toward, you know, comedy, banter, very in the moment kind of action set pieces kind of writing, which is great. And I've always been more overall looking at structure and themes and sort of the big picture kind of stuff. So when we started working on this, I wanted to be the one to kind of take point, because I knew that it was going to require me to stretch a little bit more and do a little bit more of that, like moment to moment character building, banter, things that I don't normally think about. And it's made me a much better writer in the process, but it's still not always the most natural thing to write. But I do think it's some of our best writing as a result, is because it has to be that much more mindful. Oddly, it was, I think the Catskin and the Rose was probably the easiest thing that I've written so far. I tore through that in about a week and a half. It's a 68 page graphic novella. And yeah, I wrote the entire script in under 2 weeks just because I was really excited about it. And it came extremely naturally to me, which is strange because I've never done fantasy or romance before. I was just excited to write about the characters. I loved the idea of like doing a sort of swashbuckling romance, like Princess Bride kind of vibe to it.
And now, was this something when like specific about Catskin and the Rose as well? And is there going to be, is this a one-off story or is it going to be like your others where there's going to be a sequential series as well?
It was written as a one-off story, but as we sort of, as we were working on it, as I finished the script, I realized that I had made a world that was a lot bigger than I intended to, and I had opened myself up kind of too well to the possibility of a sequel. So that's, I'm not going to promise anything. It's something we're looking into. We may very well get a sequel to this book. Of course, we have to get the book out first. And I'm absolutely excited to be producing that right now. Rachel Distler is plugging away at the pages as we speak. So
this is, mm-hmm. as we mentioned, this is volume one that you've put together this Kickstarter that it's going to be a combined issues of five issues.
Right. Yeah. So it's 108 pages, five issues. It's the first full arc of the story.
Okay.
It's about a brother and sister that find a glove that crash lands out of the sky, and they discover that anything they punch while wearing it turns into a mech. So yeah, it's a big weird concept that is just a ton of fun. They have to use it to beat up these insect creatures that are terrorizing their town, come out of nowhere. And there are a lot of kind of open questions as to where the glove came from, what is the extent of what it can do, that slowly get answered as the story goes on, and will continue to be answered in the second arc. It's funny, it's witty, it's got a lot of heart. The characters are some of my favorite characters I've ever written in this book. It's the rare all ages book, that isn't, and by which I don't mean like a book for kids. I mean a book for the kid in your heart. if you're 5 or 50, like you can enjoy this book. I firmly believe.
So there's so much creativity behind this Mechaton where, like you say, whatever that glove punches mm-hmm. turns into turns into a mecha.
That came from, when you're 16 and you're hanging out with your friends and watching a bunch of anime and drinking sports, they're like energy drinks, and you're just coming up with stupid ideas of like, this would be dumb or cool if this happened. And I think it was me and Dalton's friend Logan came up with the initial concept of just like, what if you had a glove and it punched things and it turned into a mech? And that stuck with us for like 10 years. We just thought about like, that would be really cool. Yeah, that's a great idea. And so when we moved to like, we wanted to start an ongoing comic, and we remembered this idea. Dalton had already written kind of a version of it that needed a lot of workshopping to make work and turn it into what it is now. But we went to Logan, who came up with the idea, and we're like, are you cool with us using this? And he's like, oh yeah, just put me in the book somewhere. So if you're wondering, he's the waifu guy at his own request.
What are some of the more creative mechs that you guys have come up with in the series based off of the things getting punched?
So the original first mech was supposed to be the house, which is what happens in issue 3. And Wait, but my probably still my favorite mech was I was just convinced like we need something smaller that gets the point across, but doesn't feel like it feels like there needs to be a progression up to the house and then beyond. And so I suggested a hot dog cart because we have this great character who serves hot dogs out of this cart and is super friendly. And I'm like, what if we just use his hot, like it gets busted up and we have to use the hot dog cart as a mech. And that turned out to be like the most iconic thing in the book is that hot dog mech with the thing on the thing on its chest. It's yeah, it's incredible. But there's tons of little, like, there's, I think, 7 or 8 mechs in the first arc, and they all look incredible, drawn really brilliantly by Fernando Pinto. He gives them sort of a cartooniness that still feels very, like, slapped together, but also could be powerful. Like he nails the visual design so well that it's hard not to love all of them. I think one of my favorite gags in the book is that each mech has its own unique weaponry. It's just whatever it has on hand kind of gets turned into some kind of weapon. So like there's an umbrella shield and a brat buster and a condiment cannon on the hot dog mech, and everything makes sense. We establish that trope, and then at some point they punch a police car, and they go, "All right, what's in here? Is there like a donut duster or a siren or something that we can do with that?" And they just go, "There's a machine gun." Still one of my favorite gags. And everyone, including the monster, is like, "Why? Why would that be here?" That is too much hardware.
You, as a writer, you've always done really well with character development. Did you have to struggle with Mechaton and saying, like, as a prose writer having to, like,
sure,
the struggle with backstory?
The mechs themselves aren't sentient. They're not robots. They're right. Power armor, essentially. Yeah. So Derek is the one behind underneath the mechs at all times.
Okay.
And the character development of Derek is why I wanted to tell this story in the first place. It's really cool to have the glove that punches things and they turn into robots and you fight giant monsters. That's awesome. And that sort of drives the story on a visual and plot level, but it's... What immediately stuck out to me about the story is Derek is a kid who wants to do the right thing, but is a little bit naive. And this really gives him, the chance to trial by fire and become, the person that he wants to be in a really active sense. Because he starts out, he kind of knows he wants to do good in a very vague way, but he doesn't have any ambition. He mostly just, sits in the basement playing video games all day, which, hey, same. But when thrust upon this power, he has to sort of go through a full arc of, do I even want this? This is really scary. How can I own this and turn it into something that I'm not afraid to be a part of?
And so who's the audience for this?
Primarily we wrote it for kind of people in our generation. I say our, me and Dalton's, which we're 30 and 31 respectively. And that's painful to say. But like people who grew up on like Toonami's Midnight Run and sort of the early wave of anime and, those coming of age stories, and even Static Shock and JLU and Batman the Animated Series, that like kind of wave of animation that really broke through and sort of broke the mold of like this is just a toy commercial versus this is a really this is an impactful story that works on several levels and you can enjoy as a kid but also your parents enjoy because it's just a good story. That's sort of what we wanted to, that this was sort of our love letter to that. So that's who I wrote it kind of four, but I think it works for just about every any kind of fan of shonen or just the general, like, I don't want to say superhero, but, you know, power fantasy kind of vibes. And that could be, you know, a 7-year-old kid who's really into My Hero Academia and Hunter x Hunter, or it could be, you know, a 50-year-old who's been collecting action comics since he was, you know, a little kid. I think it does work for just about everyone, on some level at least.
How do they get a copy of this book? Because as you say, it's volume one is now on Kickstarter, as of this recording. But for those that might be listening to this a couple months from now, and they're interested in getting a book, where's the best place they could go to for this book?
Probably it would be my website. I'll have a link to it. One of two places. Either you can find a way to buy it directly from me through my website, through Twitter. I will, you know, I'll have a Ko-Fi set up. I'll have some kind of pre-order short store set up for it, and I will personally put it in a Gemini mailer and mail it to your house. The other option is to, if I'm currently running a Kickstarter, which, you know, most
you always, yeah,
there's a good chance that I'm currently running a Kickstarter when you're listening to this. Then it will be an add-on, and you can, if you want to support that Kickstarter, you can then go into the add-on section, find the book, and add it to your cart. And that'll help kind of bundle everything to save on shipping, would right. be my pitch for that. But
and could somebody get like the individual issues, but or now you're only
we still only have the individual issues. One. If you're a floppy kind of person, I absolutely can make that happen. it would just be I would probably not advertise them as much, but I'm very accessible. If you write me an email, I will 100% respond to it. As long as it doesn't wind up in spam and I never see it. you can find me on wellsthompson.com, just my name. You can also find me through Twitter at wellsthomp, name right there. If you reach out to me, then I will 100% find a way to get you my book.
Is this one of your, like, Frankenstein Unconquered? Like, is Mechaton the one that is made to be an ongoing series? Like, is there going to be an end game in this at all?
Yeah, there is an ending that we're working toward, yes. It's not, like, such a final ending that there's no chance it could go on past that point, but that is when we set out to make it, we had sort of three arcs that we were wanted to work through, and we just got done with the first one. We've got roughly 11 issues planned, this first five included. And then after that, if you know, it's really popular and people want it to continue in one form or another, we would be happy to look at that. I've never liked ongoing in the sense of it goes on for eternity, because then you run into the heroes problem where it just kind of, you know, it sputters out, the quality kind of begins to dip, it feels really aimless. I like stories that have an ending in mind. It's not to say it's over, but at the very least, there is going to be a place of closure.
And now, so I'm really curious about, because your genres of your comics that you put out are so varied, do you see any overlap with your readers? Are there some readers that will read all of your work, or you see that some seem to gear towards one genre or the other?
I think mostly people gear toward one genre, but there is definitely some overlap. Not as much as I maybe would have loved to hear when I first started out. Like I said, I think, you know, probably if I could go back and tell myself 3-4 years ago, you know, how to what the best path forward would have been, it wouldn't have been spread yourself very thin. It probably would have been focus up, do one genre, but that doesn't mean that people don't, love what we're doing across the board. Yeah, I think that it's definitely it's the harder path that we've chosen, but it is worth it.
Right.
Getting to put out these very different kind of books.
Right. Because it seems like when you're looking at that, Catskin in the Row has got, 228% funded. Frankenstein Unconquered got 247% funded with your one and two. And then you've consistently had Mechaton has always been successfully funded. Do you, and is there any, I'm just really curious because you have such a job. Is there some kind of fan art, or is there something you can do with like your Kickstarter? You can have like some sort of like poster with all of your IPs in one room playing poker or something like that,
Oh, that would be fun.
or
Yeah,
anything.
we have gotten some fan art. Specifically, we've gotten two pieces of fan art for Mechaton, and I absolutely adore them. I considered putting them in the first volume as back matter, but I decided against it. Maybe one day eventually. But yeah, if you are if you read my work and you're a fan of it and you want to make fan art of everything of all my different characters meeting up in one room, I would love to see it. I absolutely invite.
Like a parallel reality thing, like team up or something like that. Yeah, it'd be fun.
Well, Dalton, and then the other thing is that Dalton swears that Mechaton and Frankenstein the Unconquered take place in the same universe, and I'm like, shut up. That no, they don't. Well, I mean, if so, it's so disconnected it doesn't matter. But one is like 500 years in the future of the first one.
So then the question as well is, and then what's next? Because you must have some fans, like you say, you have some fans of Catskin in the Rose, you have some fans of Mechaton, which you've kind of waylaid them, you've kind of like eased them because you've given them something. You just recently just came out with Frankenstein the Unconquered issues 1 through 4.
Yeah, we did 3 and 4. Those are in production right now,
Right.
which that production had to delay a bit because our artist broke her hand, which is just like it's so awful and ironic, and I feel so bad for them, but to then be like, hey, we just funded, thank you guys so much. Yeah, our artist just broke their hand. We're gonna have to wait a little while. Yeah, it's been a trip, but yes, I have something in the pipeline, and like I said before, it's very different. It is a slice of life erotic comedy called Smut. That's what we're working on right now. Yeah, and I have a superstar team on board. Bianca Milanez and DC Hopkins are handling the interiors. Elisa Romboli and a lot Eileen Wajaja on covers, and just a bunch of other artists doing supplementary work here and there. I'm really, really excited for it. We'll hopefully be launching that sometime in April. Sometime
Okay.
early-ish April. So yeah, that's my next venture. I'm very excited for it. It's a swerve for sure, but it's again just like one of those projects I didn't see myself doing necessarily. And then once I started working on it, I realized, oh, this is really good. I need to keep going. I need to keep pulling this thread.
Right. And is that going to be an ongoing series then too, or that's just like a
It's
one
a
and
mini
off?
series. It's a I'm planning for 3 issues.
That's interesting. 3 issues. A lot of times people will do like 4 issues or 6 issues.
Yeah, I've learned my lesson. I'm not pushing. I very much stick to, we have these plans for Frankenstein and for Mechaton. where Mechaton has 5 issues. We initially planned for 6 issues in the first arc for Frankenstein. And if I could go back and tell myself, you know, how it all shook out, I would say, work on some shorter stuff, finish some books. So yeah, I'm intentionally keeping it small with room to grow if I want.
And that's kind of like what you did with Catskin and the Rose, is making it a one shot. But if there's
that room was, to grow, that then... was very much the impetus for that was I'm working on these ongoing books and there's no end. The end is so far in sight that it's becoming frustrating. So I just want to end something. I just want to show people that I can tell a full story. And wrote The Catskin and the Rose. It's been very well received so far. And I'm really looking forward to actually getting it fully in print, published, and out into the world.
So we kind of talked about it before, Wells, but if people want to learn more about your work, they can go to your website, correct?
So website is the most consistent place to see stuff that I'm, you know, working on, stuff that's available. There's also a sign up there for my newsletter, Comics, Cats, and Cocktails, that will take you to my Substack. There you get, pages that are being worked on, covers that no one else gets to see ahead of time. You get cocktail recipes, because I was a waiter for 10 years and a bartender.
That's awesome.
As well as pictures of my cats, who are quite cute. So definitely a lot of reasons to sign up for that. That's the best way to see stuff before no one else does. And you can also follow me on Twitter for as long as Twitter is functional, which, you know, we're entering the barely functional phase, but still technically around.
Well, this is great, Wells. I mean, it's always fun to sit down and talk to you, but, you know, don't be a stranger. You're on like 2 years ago. Come on more often. This is fun.
No, for sure I will. I'll keep you in mind.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. It's been great. Yeah, no, when we first got here and we were doing interviews and stuff, it was like Tommy Wiseau's face and then this one was empty. And I was just like, I feel like I need something better behind me if I'm going to be like just something a little bit more visually interesting for people to look at. So.